Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Hallelujah.
He is risen.
Truly, he is risen.
Resurrexit.
Resurrexit.
Sicut dixit.
Dude, we are so good at Latin now.
Dude, I like...
Now that we are taking our Latin class, it's almost like we are just... It's bene.
It's, yeah, majore bene.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's just ridiculous.
It's
really what it is. I got a phone call from somebody asking me if I would consult on some older translations. They were looking for an expert in...
On translations?
They heard I had been studying.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you tell them?
I said I'd be happy to help. For a small fee.
For a small fee that you won't be able to afford.
Yeah.
And you'll be very upset with my work.
I Googled it.
How do you know? Yeah. It's a secret Google translation.
I have learned.
Do not.
Under no circumstances should you trust Google Translate in the sphere of Latin.
No.
Lingua Latina, no notient.
You should... Okay, there's... We have new listeners. We're on new stations in Texas. It would be good for us to rehash the story.
Okay, yeah. So we, you know, say cheers to Jesus. It's like one of our
things,
catchphrases, motto, mantra.
Can I do this while you?
Yes. And so one day I was like, you know, it would be cool to know how to say cheers to Jesus in Latin. There's this thing called the internets, and you can find stuff like this. You can learn things that you don't know. And so I pull up Google Translate, type in cheers to Jesus. It says, Iu bensium Jesu. And it's like, perfect. Done. And so I start saying it, and we start saying it for months.
Yes.
We're saying this, Iu bensium Jesu. And then we go to Clear Creek with Brother Nesbitt. He was on our, you can go look up the episode. And then we say it.
Because you were like all proud.
And we was like, we basically.
Gonna impress him.
We basically speak Latin.
Right.
I don't know if you know this, Padre. Potter. then he's like, as soon as the segment was over, he just starts cracking up and he says, what did you say? And I was like, oh, Iu bensium Jesu. And he's laughing even harder. He's like, that doesn't mean anything. That's totally nonsensical. And it's like, no, it means cheers to Jesus. He's like, no, it definitely does not. It means like, and I forget what he said, but it was like totally nonsensical. And it's like, oh, it's a good thing nobody else speaks Latin either, because otherwise this would be embarrassing.
Because for months,
right?
For months we've been saying it, and no one called us out on it. They just like, oh, well, apparently they know.
Well, that's the thing. Nobody speaks Latin.
Right. So tonight we're going to talk about festivity. We're going to talk about the Peepster.
Yes.
So Joseph Peepster.
We got a really, really awesome bottle of scotch in order to be fastidious. Fastidious?
I don't know.
Is that the right? Fastidious?
That's very...
Fastidious.
Very questionable.
I think maybe if I keep saying it,
it'll work.
It'll just be right.
Yeah, maybe so.
People will just come around to my side of that word. Anyway, we are drinking... We should tell them what we're drinking. We're drinking Octomore this evening.
11.1.
So this is only a 5-year scotch.
Really? The Octomore is?
That's what it says. Aged 5 years.
Hmm. But you know what? The Wee Beastie from Ardbeg is what?
It's also 5 years, right?
Yeah, 5 years.
So Octomore, I believe, kind of rose to fame because when it came out, I think it was the most heavily peated scotch.
Parts per million in the world. It was the heaviest.
Right. And so here it has here on the bottle, parts per million is 139.6. I don't know like what to compare that to. You know, like Ardbeg, Laphroaig, maybe they're like in the 120s. I'm just kind of shooting from the hip there because I did look it up one time.
I don't remember.
I just am not really sure.
I've looked it up as well. I can't recall. Myself.
I think now there are other scotches that are higher than Auchtermore, but I don't think that they're as good. I think that's, you know, they're kind of like a one-trick pony.
Kind of like the one-chip challenge.
Right, like I just went for peat.
Right.
You don't really want to drink this,
right.
You know? So anyway, this bottle, it was like $190.
So it's expensive.
It's expensive. But when you're you know, being fastidious, as we are here in Easter.
Yes, for the octave of Easter.
Yeah, we are still in the octave of Easter. You know, it's go big or go home. You know what I mean? With prudence, yeah, as a guide, of right, course. But let's cheers.
More on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers. Cheers. Oh, and then shout out to Danny and Tony Molina.
Mm.
They're here. They've been listening to the cat. They have tried their best to figure out ways to cut purgatory, like to cut into the purgatory
right, so
time.
They're suffering.
So they've been suffering listening to our show.
And Lecter. Danny Molina is here.
Is here in studio with us. Yes.
Thank you for being here.
Yes. So what?
Molino.
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 Molino. I said Molina, didn't I? Did I say Molina?
You're Molino. Like Hector Molina. That's what you're thinking.
That's what I was thinking of. Yes. So anyway, thank you so much for being here again.
Yeah. Seminarian in Nebraska.
That's right.
At
yes.
Our Lady of Guadalupe Seminary. Excellent. So I haven't tried it yet.
I haven't either.
But
Jim is as here as well, so no one can break
yeah.
in.
Oh yeah, hey Jim, would you call this scotch yummy?
It's a notch. It's delicious.
It's better delicious.
Better than yummy.
So
the aroma is just like wow. I haven't even got just like a foot away from my face and it's like all over me.
The aroma
it's
says awesome. Its initial notes of lemon, wet peat, pencil shavings, and salt. I tried my best to say pencil shavings and kept going without laughing until I heard you laugh and I couldn't do it anymore.
There's a competition among scotch tasters that it's like, who can come up with the most like random things to describe
scotch?
Well,
then we got peach yogurt, cinder toffee, rubbery, smoky, almost anesthetic notes coming from the peat smoke.
Wow.
Well balanced with a green fruit and malty notes coming through the spirit. Honey, malt, sugar, dried grass. I get that moisture out of there. Just good old dried grass. Come through with thyme, with a little hint of ginger and wood spice. That's just on the nose.
So, I believe it. I mean, I...
Do you get any sweetness? I haven't tried it yet. Is there any sweetness to it? Because the first thing it says on taste is brown sugar sweetness.
I don't know. I was so like the it is so powerful. I don't even know. It's like I just tried it and I'm still sitting here going like, what just happened? That is incredible. Finally a beverage that's almost as manly as I am. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, I like it. I just wish it was not.
Wow, that is delicious.
$190, but it is good.
And it is sweet on the front. Like the initial, like is the peat comes in gradually. It starts out sweet with the brown sugar and then comes in.
You were right. It does.
It's very interesting. It also has that. So it says chilly heat with high strength that carries Auchtermore DNA across the palate. It is clean. So it talks about even like chili. Remember when we had Ardbeg Corey Brecken?
Yeah.
And had that peppery
taste.
Yeah,
totally.
There is some similarities there with this one.
Uh-huh.
That's really amazing. That is a really, really good
How do they do
scotch.
That? That's... I don't know how they do that. Why isn't everybody doing this?
Well, obviously, it costs too much.
It's hard to do, obviously, yeah.
So, it was distilled in 2014 from a 2013 harvest of 100% grown barley in Concerto. Full-term Phil American Whiskey cask with Jim Beam, Heaven Hill, and Jack Daniels is the barrels that they use. And then it's 59.4% ABV. So, I mean, that's why it has a little bit. It has kick. Okay. So it's strong.
Yeah.
Has a kick to it. And there's a limited of only 30,000 bottles made. So.
Wow.
Dave, so we are really getting close to releasing the Pat Flynn extra course that we're doing for patrons
mm-hmm.
on like strength, on fitness, on nutrition, the philosophy behind it, why it's important for men to be fit as a protector, provider, establisher of the family.
Yeah.
And then like the how-to with kettlebells. He's the kettlebell guy. We did a show with him. Uh-huh. If you go back and just type in Pat Flynn on the Catholic Man Show, you'll find it.
Also, like, great philosopher.
He is. He's extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
So that course is coming out. I'm also in the process of working with somebody on getting a, we're trying to get the rights to it first. But because that's always the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah.
But I think that we're going to be able to have the audiobook of Joseph Pieper's book that we're talking about tonight, In Tune with the World, A Theory on Festivity. So we're going to try to audiobook it as well for our patrons.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. This is something that happened tonight.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, if you go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, you can support the
show. Who's
going to
do it? Are you going to be
no,
the voice?
No, not at all.
We should have Juan
somebody
do it.
Else.
We should have Juan.
Juan do it. In Spanish.
Yeah.
Si.
So anyway, if you support the show, 100% of the your support goes to the show.
Because stuff like this.
Dave and I do not get a chance. Do not take any money for it. So.
No.
Starting my second week in the diocese this week.
Yeah.
So I timed it perfectly.
With
I came into
5-day weekend.
Yeah. I timed it. I worked for 3 days. I got off 5. That was like perfect timing on my part, right?
I want to work for the church. That sounds awesome.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about working this week at the diocese. We have a USCC. Ooh, never mind. I don't know if that's public yet.
Whoa, bro. Pump the brakes.
Yep. That's something that I will be working on, though.
Okay.
We'll be right back. This segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker. Go to thecatholicwoodworker.com for heirloom quality home altars, crucifixes, and rosaries.
It's also the only place where you can get the official rosary of the Catholic Man Show. Type in promo code TCMS for 10% off all purchases. TCMS for the Catholic Man Show. CatholicWoodworker.com. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Juan puts out on the buttons. We've got two people guarding the door today, sitting in choir, if you will. We have the one and only Jim Spencer, and then we have Danny Molino, seminarian. He looks like Neo, so I wouldn't mess with him.
I'm not going to.
Yeah. Well, you're closest to him, so it's not going to be me.
Right. You're right.
I might instigate.
You know, shocker. Like, you are an enabler.
Hey, Danny, he's talking crap about you.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the Peepster today.
Yeah.
We're just drinking a ridiculous, like, over-the-top scotch.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about festivity.
We want to talk about festivity.
It was interesting because I've been reading through this book actually through Adoration, and I've been wanting to do a topic on festivity, uh-huh. and then it was your turn to pick the topic, and you had mentioned you wanted to do it, and I was like, well, let's just do it together instead of...
Yeah. I mean, here we are. It's right after Easter. If ever there's a time to celebrate, it's now. I mean...
And understanding what, you know, how to celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the same way with, like, leisure. You have to understand what leisure is in order to do it well.
Totally.
So you have to understand what festivity is in order to do it well.
Yeah.
And we go back to Joseph Pieper, who is a German philosopher. Don't hold that against him. He's a phenomenal Thomistic philosopher.
Because he's dead now.
He is dead. Yes, he has passed away.
Yeah.
In the 90s, I believe.
Right.
But he's a great Thomistic philosopher. He did Leisure, the Basis of Culture, the Four Cardinal Virtues, among other Abuse of Language, Abuse of Power, among other books.
He goes by the Peepster on our show.
On our show.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about his book, In Tune with the World, A Theory on Festivity. And it's another short book.
Well, yeah, his books are really essays, right. with only a couple exceptions. Right. Mostly it's a compilation of his essays.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that because...
You can actually read it and be done.
Yeah, they're not very long, right? Yeah, so you can handle it all. Like, you're not going to be reading this for a month or something.
Right, right. And it's funny, in here, so a lot of his essays actually are combating or like, answering things that Nietzsche had said, because they were... Nietzsche would propose something, and then... the Peepster would come back and say, well, here's how we would answer that in a Thomistic understanding. But one of the things he gives Nietzsche credit for is Nietzsche said that it's not about being able to have a festival. It's about being able to find people who could actually participate in them well. So, mm-hmm. Which I think that's very accurate even today. It's like G.K. Chesterton said something like, New York City, downtown New York City is beautiful for those who cannot read. Because, you know, downtown, you know, there's all these lights, it's all colorful, it's all crazy, you know, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Unless you know how to read, and then you realize a lot of it's not very good.
Or right.
Moral.
Right.
You know, so, so we're going to talk about festivity, we're going to talk about this book. And I'm sure we'll be linking it to leisure that's probably a good way to start, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say it's a sub virtue of leisure.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because having a festival is a type of leisure, mm-hmm. you know, leisure is not a type of festival, but festival is, you know, falls under the category of, maybe like the fullest expression of leisure apart from the mass, you know, and because attending the mass is the highest form of leisure.
Mm-hmm.
But a festival is, you know, maybe next.
Depending on what it is. Sure.
I mean, yeah, like,
and how well it's done.
Don't hold me to that, but it's up there. You know what sure. I mean?
So he talks about, and I kind of just... picked out about seven different things he goes through on some keys or ingredients. Sometimes he calls them ingredients of festivals.
Okay.
And so I thought it'd be good to maybe talk about a couple of the, you know, some of those, and then try to figure out how to apply those in today's world.
Okay.
But so first of all, he says that festivals can only arise from a working day. You know, which would make sense, like Easter, you know, without Good Friday, there can't be a Easter.
Yeah. You
know?
He doesn't mean that you can't have a festival on Saturday.
No. He's just talking.
But if there's not a harvest, like if you haven't been working to sow and reap the crop, then there's not a harvest, right? You know, so this idea of having a festival, it needs to be something that's been worked for. You know, and that there's a reason that you're having it. Otherwise, you lose an essential element in the attitude that those who are participating should have. And it's like this attitude of gratitude. You know what I mean?
An affirmation.
Yeah, exactly. An affirmation, as I believe
he says.
Yeah, he kind of calls it that. Otherwise, you end up with like... You know, somebody who just has all this money and, like, everywhere they go, in every room of their house, there's, like, a dish of caviar and, like, they don't care. Like, it's just, oh, sure, throw it all away.
Right.
I don't care about it. You know, you just totally take it all for granted, you know? So if you haven't worked, if you haven't participated in the prerequisite,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, just like what you said, like, Lent comes before Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Without Lent, Easter doesn't have the significance.
Right. And I wanted to talk about also like Jason Craig, who runs, he does a Spirit or no Spade, and gosh, I can't remember his magazine, but he has a magazine. Jason Craig, he does great. He does has a great book on boyhood as well. Defending Boyhood, I believe is what it's called. But I heard him give this talk, and he made a really good distinction between festivals and partying. Because, you know, when you think of festivals, you think like, okay, let's all go, you go party and things like that. Because here's the difference. The guy who took his dad's inheritance and went and partied.
Yeah.
When he came back, his dad slaughtered the fattened calf. and had a feast. You know, the boy was going and running away from something. He was saying no to everything, and the dad was coming back and saying yes to everything. Yes to this, to his repentance. Yes for him to come back. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, sure.
And so festivals are not anything that we're saying no to. It's an affirmation. In fact, that's what Pieper says. It's an it's the essence of what a festival is. It's an affirmation. It's a good,
right. And also, a party is the is its own end. Like the end of a party is just a party. The end of a festival is to celebrate a greater reality. You know, there is a higher reality, and that's why you're having a feast. You know, as a way of like expressing the thing that that you're seeking to celebrate, right? Mm-hmm. A party is just like, oh, let's party,
right? But when the prodigal son comes back, you know, and he and there's something a greater good to be
right.
celebrated,
exactly.
You know, and we slaughtered
the
fatted calf,
a feast.
Yeah, put a robe on this and this guy. Like, how awesome would it be also to just get a like walk around with a robe
was,
on at
that's
a party?
That's what I was trying to say about the Saint Joseph before we started recording.
Like it would be pretty sweet.
That's what I'm saying, bro.
I think it'd be. I mean, it'd be weird. In today's world,
totally,
it would be a weird dude.
I would be willing to embrace it, though.
But it would be kind of cool. But yeah, but I mean, the prodigal son, he was the one, you know.
Not a bathrobe, though.
No.
Totally different.
Totally different. Yeah. But the prodigal son, he went out and partied. He said mm-hmm. no to all of his responsibilities. He
right.
said no to reality, the things
and,
that he...
And why was he partying? Just to party.
Just to party.
Right, yeah.
And then blew all of his inheritance. He came back. His dad, you know, threw a festival for him. Mm-hmm. And Jason Craig brought that up, and I'm not sure where he got that, but so that's not mine, but I thought it was a really good way to kind of distinguish between festivals.
I like that. It is a good one.
So okay, so you want to get into the ingredients of what he says, which the first one we've kind
sure.
of already talked about, but he says play.
Mm-hmm.
Leisure has to be part of a festival.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because one thing that I learned from Sam Guzman, our buddy, the Catholic gentleman,
mm-hmm.
Is that in heaven, that's principally what we'll be doing. We will be at play with the Lord. Like this, it's like this imaginative, creative play, essentially, that will, that like, if you want to say like, what will you be doing? It will be a form of play.
Or rest.
Yeah, but it's both.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Something I'd have to think about.
Totally.
But so yeah, the pleasure, leisure is kind of the first ingredient, which
mm-hmm.
Leisure, again, it has to be a realm of activity that is meaningful in and of itself.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
there's one. Contemplation is the next one he brings up.
Mm.
And when you think of contemplation, it's like, well, okay, so what are you talking about? Like, you know, vocal prayer, then meditation, then contemplation. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I don't think so.
No, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about... the simple intuition of reason. He's talking about the mind's eye resting on whatever manifests itself before him. Like understanding that reality is reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, understanding what is going on in front of you right now is really what he's talking about.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have anything else to say about that?
No. No, I mean, it's... I have to think about that a little bit more, but
I mean, but you talk about that all the time. How like one of your main missions in life is to get people to just stop what you're doing,
yeah.
and think
and like be conscious for a second,
right?
Like you realize that you're doing stuff right now,
right? Which I mean, which is between
like, checking your Facebook page, you know, you actually accomplished something. I don't know if you knew that.
So,
like you drove, people are driving. That really scares me. Like
when they're yeah.
like, there are thousands of people on the road right now who like might not even actually be aware that they're driving. I know this because it's happened to me. You get somewhere and you're like, oh,
how did I get here? Yeah. Or you start exiting and you're like, where are you going? It's like, oh,
I don't know.
You know
this
what?
Is just the way I always go.
Yeah.
When I go places.
So when we get back, we're going to continue talking about the ingredients of a festival according to Joseph Pieper and then how to apply it to our life. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling? strongly to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So, go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Enjoying some Octomore. Talking about festivity. Happy Easter. Alleluia. We are the Easter people.
Have your kids been talking about the A word? My girls all Lent were like, we can't say the A word.
Dude, okay, let me tell you something about just getting old. Because yeah. I've realized...
My knees hurt in the morning.
The last couple of weeks, I've just realized that I'm getting older. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you have these moments where you just realize the reality of what's happening.
Right.
You contemplate reality and you realize, I'm just getting
old. Like, you're sitting in a chair and you're like, I gotta pee, but that means I have to get up. And like...
No, this is not the example I was going with. I was getting gray hair. I'm getting gray hair.
Okay, yeah.
But another thing that happened was, like, so we're in...
But you're already married.
I'm already married.
You know, like...
So it's okay.
Who cares?
That's right.
You're already married.
I'm there. I've locked it in.
Right.
So we're sitting there at Easter Mass, and, you know, Alleluia was, you know, right before the gospel's going, and, like, I'm over here, like, fighting tears, you know, as they were singing, like, the Alleluia, and I'm over here, like, you know, trying my best because I don't want to make a scene. I don't want anybody looking, you know, like, I don't want my boys looking like, what's wrong with Dad? Because that would be the first thing they say. And then it just brings up a whole deal where everybody's looking at Dad and it's like, just fight it. You know, and I'm like over here, like, trying my best not to cry on Easter Mass when the Alleluia was happening. I would never have done that even a few years ago, probably. Mm-hmm. But it's just... one of those things that happened that, you know, my dad has gotten softer and that, his older age.
You know what? It happens.
Like, it just, like, you just get your heart, you just get softer.
You just, yeah, I
you
agree.
Just, like, you just maybe get more.
Maybe softer is not the right word, you know, like, maybe that's just what we think it is.
Yeah, maybe it's just, like, you're getting more in tune with, like, what's happened, like,
I think your
the
hormone,
emotional side.
I think it's your hormone
my
levels.
Hormone levels low T.
I cannot listen to a glory story without... tearing
up. The glory stories.
Glory stories are.
They will get you.
Okay, so we're talking about festivity. We're talking about. We just went through the first two, which is play or leisure, was the first one. The second one was contemplation. The third one is the phenomenon of wealth.
Yes, you need magnificence.
But he's not necessarily talking about money.
Oh, okay. I see.
So
I see what you're doing.
He's not talking about money.
The plenty.
So yeah. He's talking about...
That's what we were going for with the...
Octomore.
With the Octomore. You know, like, something of plenty.
Right. So, but he's not even talking about material things, but he's talking about a magnitude of, like, charity, a magnitude of...
Interesting.
You know, of a magnitude of atmosphere among the community of commonality of some of us all being together to celebrate,
yeah.
A spirit of cheer, of joy, and so there has to be a magnitude of that. In fact, so he talks about how the naysayer cannot enjoy a festival, cannot participate in festivals. Let's say he says festivity is impossible to the naysayer, and he uses naysayer in. Probably a different sense than what we use it in today. In today's world, we say naysayers, probably what negative Nancy is.
Yeah, haters.
Haters, whatever you want to call. But he's talking also about the money, which is something you...
Nay, sir.
Nay. Something that you kind of alluded to earlier. He says that the more money somebody has, and above all, the more leisure time they have, because they don't have as much responsibility, they don't have as much work, the more desperate it is for them to be to participate in this possibility of festivity.
Yeah, they just see it as more impossible, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's like they can't even imagine, like, this idea, you know, this well-ordered idea of a festival. It doesn't make sense to them because, like, well, like, to me, to them, that's like a Tuesday, mm-hmm. you know? So what's so great about it? You know,
so one of the things also though that you know you think about when it's the phenomenon of wealth is obviously Jesus' first public miracle. The wedding feast of Cana. I mean, this is just sure. He doesn't bring this up, but that's just something that came to my mind whenever I was reading about this. Mm-hmm. Is obviously we're talking about an abundance of charity and things like that, but he also goes into talking about the abundance of material things if possible, you know, food,
right.
drink, things like that. And you know, Jesus at the wedding feast of Cana, you know, he didn't just make a little bit of good wine. Mm-hmm. He made a super abundant amount because it was a festival.
Right. Yeah, or the feeding of the 5,000.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's another one that he talks about.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like the important element here is that, like, why is a festival? Why are we holding it in such high regard? It's because there's symbolic truths to it, but there's also just realities behind it that, like, bring you in accordance with higher truths. You know, we are the body of Christ. We are not many bodies, but we are one body. And so when you have a festival, you have all of these parts participating in an organized way in this one celebration. You know, it's like, okay, think about a potluck dinner. You know, that might be a more down-to-earth example, something everybody knows about. You know, you don't have to bring a whole dinner. You bring one, you know, like one side item. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, when you get there, there's no way you can eat all the food, right?
Right.
I mean, just because it's
gluttonous. Right. If you did.
And so by you participating in just this little way, it all of a sudden you have everything that you need. You know, here's the whole body acting as one, celebrating some higher truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why it's better than like, oh, it's great. It's a feast day. I'm going to go out and, you know, go get a fancy steak dinner by myself.
Right.
You know, that's a form of feasting, but it's not on the same level as a festival like we're talking about.
That may be more celebrating than a festival.
You mean a feast?
Yeah.
You mean going out for a steak dinner? Yeah.
More celebrating.
Right. But there's still like a feasting element to it, right? You know, yeah. Like, oh, it's a special thing. I don't usually do this.
Sure.
I'm honoring, you know, it still could be a good thing, but you're doing it by yourself. It's just not, it doesn't have all the same, it's right. not doing it to the same degree as when you would come together as a community.
Right. The next one he talks about is affirmation, which we've kind of touched on a little bit, but he actually says that affirmation is the substance of festivity. That festivals are impossible, like, to the naysayers, like we said, and the more money. Oh, I already said that the more money they have, the harder it is for uh-huh. them to actually enjoy and partake in festivities.
Mm-hmm.
But he says festivities live on affirmation, even celebrations for the dead, like when we have All Souls Day or Good Friday. It's still a sort. It's what he says, a sort of festival. It's a sort of celebration because this isn't something that we're, you know, also this life isn't permanent, you know, it isn't what we're shooting for. It's right. the next life. And so yeah. in a Christian understanding of knowing what our end is, which is hopefully to be in front of the beatific vision, which is what he talks about, like earlier he actually quotes St. John Chrysostom about the essence of man and like how we are made for the beatific vision, and he uses the Latin form, which maybe you know what the Latin form of beatific vision is, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but beatifico visio,
yeah.
whatever
yeah, I'm
it
sure
is.
That's it. You probably nailed it.
You probably throw an O at the end of it, and, right. you know, it probably works.
Or an orum.
Orum, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, that's what we're made for. And so even when we celebrate the dead and on All Souls Day, it's still a form of festival.
Yeah. So this idea of affirmation, I think this is like where it all, the rubber really meets the road, because This is where you're saying it is good that we are here.
Right.
You know, it is good that you, I say it is good that you are here. And it is good to live. It is
good to exist.
It is good that we are. It is right. good. And by saying that, you're saying it is good that he is.
Right.
You know, so this is where you celebrate God's life-giving love. You celebrate the work and creation of him. I mean, you can't, at the end of the day, you can't actually celebrate anything if you're not celebrating the Lord.
Right, and he talks about that. I mean, he goes into it. Shocker, but that's what he goes into.
It's fake and hollow if you're trying to sell it. And if it really is a celebration, in the end, you are celebrating God.
The divine.
Right, the divine, exactly. And so the affirmation piece is like, it's really, really big. Because,
well, like you said, it's the essence of festivity, uh-huh. or the substance of festivity.
Right.
Not the essence, but the substance.
And so, like, it's just something
matter.
Something to think about when sure. when you're having, you know, especially if you're throwing a festival. You know, when we keep using the word festival, I'm thinking like a carnival, you know, mm-hmm. Like the fair. And that's not, I don't think, what he means when he says festival. I mean, I think he just means...
Well, so at the very beginning, he gives a caveat at the very beginning of this book that the word festival means a lot of different things, and he does not go to an extent of like trying to dissect exactly what festival means,
right.
because it can't.
Okay.
The word is also used for after work, you know, or vacation, or like, and actually a festival like what we think of, or a carnival. Like, there's mm-hmm. many different forms of what festival means in the Latin form.
Right.
So he goes, this is what they all mean. It's your job to kind of use that and understand that and transcribe it the way you want.
Yeah, exactly. So it could just mean any kind of celebration, mm-hmm. really. But you need to have that element of affirmation. And the more obvious, the more overt it is, the greater, I think, the other ingredients become, especially the contemplation. You know, if it's
on reality,
yeah. You know, if it's very obvious, like this is why we're gathering. You know, there's it's a joyous occasion. You know, that just gives a more and better opportunity to bring that contemplation into it. And as you start to have that, and you know, gaze upon these realities in your mind's eye, you can find that rest and that joy, mm-hmm. which is the whole purpose of
right. And that's your response, right? Your response is the joy of everything that is good, which is the next bullet point. So when we get back, we'll pick up there and talk about joy. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. I want to give a shout out to a listener named Aaron. Ask everybody to pray for him. He's discerning his vocation.
Ooh, yeah.
So everyone, please.
Pray for Aaron.
Pray for Aaron, if you would.
We actually had another patron reach out on our Council of Man page. He's discerning the priesthood.
Sweet.
And he was saying he's in Canada. He didn't know what the regulations were from Canada to the U.S. He was wanting some clarity. Is that right, Jim? Am I saying that correctly? Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Clarity on what?
Exactly how it works. Like
For Patreon?
No. For just the paperwork, I'm assuming, and everything like that coming from the dioceses in Canada to the U.S.
Oh, he's moving here.
He's considering it, yes.
Gotcha. I was like, what are you talking about?
Sorry. Yes.
Father O'Brien.
Our good friend Father O'Brien is helping him.
Nice.
Shocker. He's like super helpful.
Happy Dingus Day to Father O'Brien.
O'Brien. he will laugh. I bet you he's driving right now and laughing.
Yeah.
We're listening to this. Okay.
I hope so.
Okay, so we talked about, before the break, we were talking about the affirmation part, and that'd be the substance of a festival, and their response to this affirmation is joy.
Yeah.
And I loved, there are so many things.
Of all the quotes you have in your notes, the one you're about to read is my favorite.
Yeah, so joy is the response of a lover receiving what he loves.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is a response of a lover receiving what he loves. And I just like when I was reading that in adoration, and like another moment where I've had these moments recently where I'm just like fighting back tears. I don't know what's going on here.
I'm a donkey on the edge.
Yeah, I'm just living a glass case of emotions. I just about broke down right then too, reading that. It's just like, that is just so beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
that
is.
Is simplistic. It's just exactly, no more needs to be said about it. It's just, that is it.
That is beautiful.
So a festival becomes a true festivity only when a man affirms the goodness of his existence by offering the response of joy.
Bingo.
So that's why joy plays such a huge role.
Okay, so I want to like...
You can't be grumpy during a festival.
Bring it... I want to like bring it down to like a practical level now because...
Okay, so if you're on Sea-Doos, how are you going to be grumpy? You're not.
I've never seen a sad person on a jet ski. Yeah,
right. Over the age of 12. Because
right. I have seen some people crying. Yeah.
But
I still think they could have been happy. Just terrified.
Joyfully terrified.
Right. Still happy to be there, but
what's Christianity like?
Die.
Joyfully terrified.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. If you do it right.
Yeah.
Okay. So like. Here's I wanna Adam throw out my personal struggles in feasting well.
I'm listening. I like when you throw out your struggles
because I'm like, all right, it's Easter, baby.
Right.
I'm eating all the cake. I'm only eating cake, and I'm eating all of it. Right.
I had chocolate cake for breakfast.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah.
And I have this tendency to like, oh, just justify my gluttony because it's Easter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And under like the banner of, oh, I'm feasting, you know, and like on some level, it's like, oh, well, I want to feast in such a way that is proportionate to the like the gravity of the feast.
True.
And so it's like, yes, I should be eating cake all the time, because Easter is that awesome. Like, if Easter had never happened, there would not be a reason to ever have a celebration for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no reason to party at all or to celebrate. Maybe only party would be the only thing to do, just to like
right
try
away.
To like pass the time, right?
Sure.
So it's like, but Easter did happen, so like let them eat cake.
Mm-hmm.
Let me eat cake, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But I know at the end of the day, like, that's not it. You still have to be temperate in your
right.
things, you know?
Right.
So how do you... It's like, oh, I will have one piece of cake. Like, to me, that's not necessarily...
Well, so I think it depends on how you have already, like, ordered your appetites.
Okay.
Right? So as you continue growing and you train your body to where your irascible and your concupiscent appetites are under control, where they're not controlling you any longer in your life, where you're not like going out and just like reacting to these appetites.
And your intellectual and your physical appetites.
I mean, your concupiscible and irascible appetites,
which are in layman's terms.
So concupiscible would be like your
concupiscible. Concupiscible.
Concupiscible. Yeah.
Concupiscible.
Yeah. So it'd be like your sexuality.
That's
like
not,
your,
I didn't
your,
say it
your
right.
Your sexual desires.
Uh-huh.
Your irascible appetites are like, you know, those moments of instinct of like either attack or like probably gluttony would be another one, wouldn't it? I mean, wouldn't that consider being one under your irascible appetites? So when you have these appetites in order where they're not controlling you any longer, but you are able to, that's why the importance of fasting, right? That's the importance of Lent. That's why, you know, you're denying the good.
To put yourself in control.
To get yourself back into control. You have a clearer understanding of how to celebrate well. So whenever you have denied yourself and you've said, no, my appetites are not controlling me, but I'm controlling my appetites, then you no longer have to, or you you don't have to worry near as much about gluttony, or you don't have to worry near as much about overdoing things or reacting or acting on impulses, because you've already the virtue is already there. The habitual habit of denying those impulses over and over again have already been kicked in, and so already kicking in, and so you know, nope, that's a little too far. So it's the same way with, like, it'd be great to have three really, really nice beers, you know, in this festival. I know that it would not be good.
Hilarity, here we come.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's like, I know it would not be good for me to have six really nice beers in this festival, even though I probably could do that, and that would be a, you know, a way of celebrating. But I know my appetites would not, you know, my person would not be able to sustain that.
Because you're not man enough for it, right?
Sure.
I'm just kidding.
Sure.
I'm
whatever.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
That's not the.
But that's.
That's not what we're trying to promote here.
Yeah. But so that's the importance of making sure when we're talking about being temperate, yeah, and we're talking about understanding, like, and continually denying your appetites and being in control of them. And you can only feast whenever you do have those in control.
Absolutely.
You can only enjoy them and for the sake of their goodness. When you do have them under control. If we had Octomore every single episode or every single day, it would not be such a treat.
Yeah.
It would eventually just be another drink that we've had.
Also, we'd all be broke.
Yeah. No, after week two.
Right. Not a bad way to go broke, though. We'll throw that out there.
So, I mean, that would be my answer. It's like,
yeah, I think that's a great answer because... No, I 100% agree that when you fast, you learn to be the one in control of your appetites instead of your appetites being in control of you. And so when you feast, you need to maintain. That's actually why you fast first. So when you feast, if you are like releasing control of those appetites, that's actually not feasting. That's debauchery. Okay. That's not what we need to do. So we need to, yes, feast while we maintain control of those appetites.
And when you do, that is feasting well.
Exactly. So whether you're having three pieces of pie or, you know, like...
Three pies.
Or three pies. As long as you're doing it, while you maintain that control over, you know, like, you're not just doing it as a reaction or like out of desire. You're doing it intentionally. Like you're right. Saying, yes, this is how I think we should be.
Well, and
acting.
Brother Father Maury told us whenever he was giving a talk to us, he said, every time you sit down for dinner, you should have one thing that you give up that no one else knows. 10 people could watch you eat and not any 10 would be the exact same answer of what did he give up? For this meal.
Yeah.
You know, so every time you feast, you still should like have some sense of denying yourself something, you know, and it be just between you and obviously God, and, you know, no one would really know about it.
Lady Pamela was telling me, she was reading in one of her Catholic mom books that for Lent, this family, they pray and then they all count to 40 before they eat. They do that during Lent.
What a great idea.
Every day at Lent, they count to 40 before anyone eats after they pray. I thought it was like really funny and also like really brilliant.
That is awesome.
San Jose Maria Escriva says that a meal eaten without a sacrifice is a meal eating like a pig.
Right. Yeah. And I think he pulled that quote from that. Yeah. So we're about to run out of time here. So I want to make sure we touch on the other two, which was pretty easy. So it has to be in concrete form. So it has to be in reality. And so he brings up, you know, music, art, the liberal arts.
Yeah, bring the beauty
into mm-hmm. the festivities. It brings in reality.
Beauty brings truth.
Right.
Helps you with all those things. Yeah.
Right. So that's one. And the other one is it has to be public in nature.
Mm-hmm. The body of Christ.
We yep. kind of talked about, you know, we're all in communion with one another. So right. it has to be. So it needs to be a public event. It needs mm-hmm. to be something that we all gather together.
But you need to bring yourself well ordered to the feast, because like that's kind of what Nietzsche was saying, is the hard part's not having a festival, but finding anyone who can enjoy it. So bring yourself with the willpower that you have gained from the fast. That way you don't have to enter into feasting with scrupulosity over your shoulder, right? Like, oh, because you cannot feast
right.
while being scrupulous.
Right.
The demons are waiting on either side of the virtue.
Right.
Right. And so...
Yep. So if you're listening on the radio right now, go check us out on the Catholic Man Show. We're going to talk a little bit about Merry Christmas and the best wishes of Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and how this relates to it. So go check us out at thecatholicmanshow.com. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Dave, I think that, will you read that? If you'll read that little section right there, I know that it's 3-4 lines, but I think it really brings home, I thought it was really interesting.
Should I do it with a German accent, like as if I was the people?
I don't think that would be the best.
When the festival goes as it should, men receive something that is not in human power to give. This is by now almost forgotten reason for the age-old custom of men wishing one another well on the great festival.
No one is okay.
All right, I'm sorry. Swedish, really, I think, would do this more justice. When a festival goes as it should, men receive something that it is not in their power to give. This is by now almost a forgotten reason for the age-old custom of men wishing one another well on great festival days. But the real thing we are wishing is the success of the festival celebration itself. Not just its outer forms and enrichments, but the trimmings. But the gift that is meant to be the true fruit of the festival. Renewal, transformation, rebirth. Nowadays, to be sure, all this can barely be sensed behind the trite formula, Happy Holidays.
Right, so I mean, that was awesome. Whenever I read that, I realized that, you know, when we say, we wish you a Merry Christmas, you know, we wish that you have a not only that you feast well, but that the divine, like, that you encounter the divine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we used to say. Now, you know, obviously that goes all for naught. When you say Happy Holidays.
Yeah. And it's so important to do this because feasting, like leisure, you know, this is a form of leisure. It's like it's what life is about.
Mm-hmm.
Life is not about working.
Right. It's about rest.
And it's not about success.
No. It's about rest.
You know, in your endeavors. We should seek to be successful in our endeavors, obviously. But life is about rest. We were made to rest in Christ.
So we say eternal rest granted to them, O Lord.
Right.
He may rest in Christ.
Right. In the garden, there was not toil. That's not to say that there was nothing for man to do in the garden. He still had to oversee the garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have to toil in the garden like man does today.
Right.
To bring about the same fruit. So this is what we're made for. This is when we have a feast, when we have holy leisure, these are the moments where we glimpse into the good things that the Lord has desired for us. It's when we get the closest view of that which eye has not seen, ear has not heard, what it is, those great things that God desires to give us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's so important to do feasting well, to know how to do it and to practice it.
It's because it's a preparation for eternity.
Exactly.
Just like friendships, just like
right.
You know, leisure festivals is a preparation for the other side of the veil.
But it's not enough just to know. It's like, oh, okay, cool. I'll do that next time. Because this is a virtue. It needs to be practiced. Like, you can't just listen to this or read Pieper's book and then like, oh, yep, okay, I know how to feast now. I'm like a pro feaster because I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that has to be learned. It's a habit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like all of the other virtues. And so it's luckily it's something that we need to really practice a lot.
Well, and
Easter is a great time to do it. You know, we're in the octave, like
right.
Every day is a feast.
And in true Benedictine form, you know, hospitality plays a huge role
right.
in festivities, right?
That's why I hope I get
the virtue of hospitality.
So I hope I'm rich someday so I can just be like super hospitable, but hospitable.
Hospitable. Practice the virtue of magnificence.
Yeah. Yes. God, I would be so magnificent.
Yeah, so I mean, that's something that my mom is really, really good at is the host.
Uh-huh.
And your mom, I mean,
yeah.
Both of our moms are really
good
at being hospitable. Like, so for instance, This Easter, we had our family come in.
Also, Jay Thomas.
Jay Thomas.
Jay Thomas
Deacon,
is like
Deacon Jay Thomas.
Thank you, Deacon Jay Thomas. Thank you.
Is a
and his wife Kelsey, the Thomases,
right?
And the Posadas, outstanding.
The Posadas are another one.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Juana is pretty good as well.
They're pretty good.
But so one thing that we did that I thought was really good, like for our family, this Easter weekend was my family all came into town at my parents' house, and we had a wiffle ball game. Mm-hmm. We picked side, you know, we drew names, picked teams, played wiffle ball. Then afterwards, as soon as when we were done, we came in, we had like refreshments, we cooled off, we had a nice dinner prepared. My mom like went above and beyond to make sure that the table was all set really nice. It looked festive. It looked appropriate for the occasion.
Apropos,
yes. And we had you know, music playing. I mean, it was just like everything, all the little details were there to make to cultivate a good time together, to generate the memories, to generate or to create the memories, and to are you gonna like just put that up?
Yeah, we were talking about hospitality. It's like I'm taking that home.
But you know, so I think tradition plays a huge role in festive, like will help play a huge role in festivities. Like,
Totally. I'm glad you said that.
Tradition is a huge part of,
as long as it's rooted in the divine, which is something that Pieper talks about in Leech of the Basis of Culture. That if tradition is not rooted in like religious truth, then it actually becomes a new form of work.
Well, it's very similar to friendship.
Yeah. But friendship,
I hadn't really thought about
friendship,
that.
Though, has a natural good apart from a supernatural good.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not quite the same, but like if you have a day that like, oh, if there's a federal holiday and there's all these traditions that like, oh, you have to, this is what we do on this day. Why? I don't know. Someone in the government made it up and like they thought it would be fun. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, okay, there's not a real reason to it. It's just like what we all do. It ends up just becoming work. Like, oh, yeah, there's just one more thing I have to do. And, you know, so if it's not rooted in the divine, then it actually isn't leisure. And I think we were talking about that with festivals. I actually forgot how I got to that point, but... That is nonetheless true, no matter if I forgot what I was really saying or not.
Thus saith.
Yeah.
David. Don David.
Dixit. Secret Dixit.
Secret Dixit.
Don David. As he said.
As he said.
In Latin.
Nice.
Yeah. See, I basically...
You can speak it. I mean,
I'm like mucho fluent over here.
Mucho bene.
Yeah.
I am going to start just like mixing Spanish
and
Latin.
I do it all the time. I'm way, Adam, way ahead of you, okay?
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
What's apart from like this Easter? What do you have a like any pro tips? Like feasting hacks, so to speak.
Feasting hacks.
Yeah.
So here's something else that I do on typically on my around my birthday. Is that I invite most of my friends over. I didn't invite you this year, but next year maybe you can make the cut. I invite most of my friends over, and we have like I smoke ribs and brisket or a pork butt or something like that all day long, and then we have like little like swimming pools or something like that for the kids. I think that as long as you, to me, it's more about the details of of the event. So if you are hospitable and you're focused on your guests and what they may want, then that's going to generate a better festivity than just like let's just throw some things together. So you know you're aware of your audience, and so you know I make sure that the kids are taken care of, because I have been to parties where we have four kids. There's a lot of us, a lot of families have 6, 10, 12 kids, you know, and so it's hard.
Some have 30
kids. Yeah.
Right.
Crazy. But sometimes parties are more work than leisure, because all you're doing is chasing your kids around,
yeah,
and trying to make sure that they're not breaking the home right. that you're in.
Yeah, do not jump on that couch.
Right. And so if you have some order in your family,
to you the magnitude of punishment that will right. come down upon you if you jump on that couch.
So if you have order within the family, but you also are under, like, give them something to do, to where they can be together. Mm-hmm. I think that helps. So whether it's some kind of craft for the kids, you facilitate ways of community within, mm-hmm. With the wives, with the husbands, with the kids, like, you know, and all of us all together. How do we be in communion with one another within our age ranges, but then all as a whole body of people who are in festivity?
Mm-hmm.
That probably did not answer your question, but that's what
I was looking for, something a little bit more specific. But
well, I'm trying.
I have one.
Okay, Juan. Go
Juan
ahead.
Has one.
So what we do in my family is we look in the calendar of the month and we see what feast days of saints are coming. And we see, oh, you know, St. John Paul II feast is coming.
Cake.
And he's one of our namesakes. So we have we throw a party.
My godson.
Your godson. We throw a party in honor of that saint. But that's a way to throw a feast and then...
And have cake.
And have cake.
Yeah.
And order your life... semi-liturgically, right? When you take those into considerations.
Yeah.
And it just gives you so many opportunities to practice perfection in feasting, because there's a lot of feasts out there.
Which I am just, like, excited to perfect feasting.
Right.
That sounds fun.
Right. I know. It's like, what I like to do, exactly what you're saying, is to take a calendar and, like, all right, whose feast days are this month? And then in that moment decide, I have a very strong devotion to every single one of these saints.
Well, what am I
not previously, but as of right now going forward.
Yeah.
I am...
St. Cuthbert, I am a big fan of
me
you.
And me and Stanislaus, like, we go way back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
right.
One of my favorite traditions that has been going 3 years strong now is for St. Michael the Archangel feast day. I have a piñata with the devil's face in it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's
and the
awesome.
Kids just beat on that piñata, and then we usually have a priest over, and the priest delivers the final blow.
Yeah,
in that piñata with a.
I have some
bat.
Sweet pictures yeah. over the years.
This next year we're gonna have a real sword fight. It's gonna be awesome. Santi versus Jude. It's going to be sweet.
Things are going to get ugly.
Yeah. They'll have pads on.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Okay, good.
But I think a good thing to do, like, I've been to some, you know, exactly what we're talking about. Hey, it's this great saint, you know, let's get together, celebrate his feast day. I, you know, recently went to a party for St. Joseph, you know, on his feast day. This is the year of St. Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you could have a party for St. Joseph any day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the year of St. Joseph. Why not, right? And I've been to a lot of these. What I think is a really, really nice touch, which has a way of kind of like bringing all these elements together, is incorporating the Angelus into you know, like bringing prayer into it. I mean, it's like, that's why you're here. You know, it's like, we're not just using this as an excuse to eat cake. Like, as you know, like, although that would be cool, you know, but
on a natural level,
yeah, like for me, that's all. I mean, I'm
sure
send
well,
me the invitation,
that brings back, you're but, bringing in the divine,
right? Exactly. But it has a way of orienting the party, I think, towards the end, which is, you know, why we're here, is to celebrate this great work this great thing that God has done through this saint, or you know, whatever it is that you're celebrating. It doesn't have to be the Angelus, but
just some sort of
the Angelus is a good one to do. It's not too long,
mm-hmm.
I was going to say everybody knows it, but actually everyone doesn't know it. But everyone should know it, and so it's like, chances are you can help educate some of the people who are there. I mean, you might have people at your party who have never prayed the Angelus.
Right,
that is very possible.
One of the best things about working from home whenever we were working, when I was working from home, was that I had the opportunity to pray the Angelus with my wife and kids every day at noon. Mm-hmm. And like, so you pray, so if you set an alarm on your phone at noon and just label it Angelus alarm, you know, at noon during lunch, if you orient a lot of your prayers with eating, you won't forget to pray because you won't forget to eat. So you're going to pray. So so if you have the alarm there, then it's very easy to pray it and get into the habit of praying it. But praying it with the family, praying it with a group of people is a great way to bring the divine into like or bring yourself into the divine of the event.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think things like that, and if you're the one hosting, even if you're not the one hosting, you can just
suggest
say, like,
it.
Yeah, like, hey,
it's noon.
And the thing about the Angelus is you can just say, like, hey, it's 3 o'clock. Guys want to pray the Angelus? You know, right. It doesn't have to be noon.
Right. Or the Divine Mercy chat. Divine Mercy is another great one.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, so, you know, like. Make the feast about what it's really about,
and be intentional. I mean,
don't be afraid to make it the real deal.
No diggity.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I guess that's the end.
I can't think.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.